Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. So today we're diving into some really interesting research. It shines a light on this tiny, often overlooked molecule, a microRNA.
miR-190A5P specifically.
Yeah, right, that one. And we want to see how, you know, measuring its abundance could maybe reshape how we predict the future for millions living with chronic kidney disease. CKD.
Yeah, the idea is to unpack the, well, the critical gaps left by our traditional kidney tests.
Exactly. And see if this single molecular messenger, this miR, can fill them. Give us a crucial early warning signal, perhaps.
That's the goal. Hashtag tag, tag one, the hook.
Okay, let's start with a really common clinical situation. Imagine two people walk into the clinic.
Okay.
Both have, let's say, moderately reduced kidney function according to the initial checks.
Right. And you run the standard tests, creatinine for filtration, maybe protein levels in the urine, the usual stuff.
And the results. They look almost identical. Mildly concerning, maybe, but similar.
But here's the thing. Clinically, their futures might be heading in completely different directions.
Totally different. Patient A, they might just stabilize. You know, live with moderate CKD for 20 years, maybe more. Manageable.
But patient B is on a different path. A silent one, often. They could progress really fast towards end-stage kidney failure, maybe within 5 years.
Wow. And the burning question, the absolute core problem is, how do we tell those two people apart now? With our current diagnostic toolkit, how do we find that sort of hidden switch, that clock that's ticking down fast in patient B, but slower in patient A?
And that's precisely why researchers are so interested in things like microRNAs or miRs.
Cellular messengers.
Yeah, exactly. They're these stable, tiny little RNA fragments that cells release into the bloodstream. They just float around.
Like little messages in a bottle?
Kind of. They act like tiny reports reflecting the real-time health status of organs, like the kidneys deep inside the body. They're sort of like cellular exhaust signals.
So if we could listen in on the kidneys by checking the blood?
We'd be listening to these miRs. And what's really fascinating, the research we're looking at today found that just one specific message, this miR-190A5P, it actually changes the entire risk assessment for certain patients. It might just reveal that hidden prognosis, #tag2, special recognition. Yeah. And, you know, we should definitely celebrate the work behind this. It's the result of some really focused, rigorous collaboration.
Absolutely. Teams primarily across the UK, right? Edinburgh, Belfast, Glasgow.
That's right. Major institutions pooling their expertise.
And what I liked is their approach. They weren't just looking where the light was already shining, so to speak.
No, they used advanced, unbiased, high-throughput sequencing, really trying to push beyond those traditional measures.
Finding new ways to understand CKD progression, identify potential biomarkers, maybe even therapeutic targets down the line. It's great work. #tag3. Background and context. Okay, let's zoom out a bit and unpack the bigger picture here. Chronic kidney disease. It's not some rare condition, is it?
Oh, not at all. It's a massive global health crisis. Affects roughly, what, 1 in 10 people worldwide?
1 in 10? That's huge.
And the numbers are climbing dramatically, especially driven by the epidemic of type 2 diabetes.
Right, T2DM.
Exactly. So diabetic kidney disease, or DKD, is now a primary cause, maybe the primary cause, of kidney failure in many developed countries.
Responsible for maybe 30%, even up to 50% of all end-stage kidney disease cases in some areas.
Yeah, the burden on healthcare systems, on patients, on families, it's just enormous.
And currently, the standard way we track kidney health relies on basically two main things.
Pretty much. First is the estimated glomerular filtration rate, EGFR. That's usually based on serum creatinine levels.
Which tells us how well the kidney is filtering waste products out of the blood, like a coffee filter, kind of.
A good analogy, yeah. And the second is the urine albumin to creatinine ratio, or ACR.
That measures protein leaking through the filter, right? Albuminuria or proteinuria.
Correct. Leakage indicates damage to the filter itself, the glomerulus.
Okay, sounds straightforward enough. So where's the gap?
Ah, the critical gap. The kidney is way more complex than just a filter. The glomerulus does the filtering, yes, but then there's this long, intricate system of tubules.
The kidney's engine room.
That's a great way to put it. These tubular cells do crucial work reabsorbing vital stuff the body needs, secreting other waste. And here's the problem. Many patients progress. Their kidney function declines, sometimes rapidly.
even when their filter seems okay.
Exactly. Even when they have normal or only slightly elevated levels of protein leakage, what we call normal albuminuria or low-level albuminuria, the filter test, ACR, looks okay-ish, but the engine is failing.
So our standard markers are measuring the filter's performance, but they're missing this silent, potentially high-risk failure happening deeper inside in those tubules.
Yeah.
Especially the proximal tubules, the PTs.
Precisely. We desperately need new non-invasive biomarkers. Things we can measure easily, like in blood or urine, that add prognostic value independently of EGFR and ACR.
Something that tells us about the health of the engine, not just the filter.
That was the specific goal here. To find a marker reflecting the health of those crucial but hard to monitor proximal tubular cells. #TagTagTag4. Core methodology.
Okay, so how did they actually hunt this down? You said it was an unbiased approach.
Right. They didn't start by saying, let's measure MIR-X because we think it's involved. Instead, they basically asked the blood samples, okay, what microRNAs are different between people with healthy kidneys and those with CKD?
Letting the data lead the way.
Exactly. They used small RNA sequencing, sRNA-seq, on plasma. Think of it like casting a really wide net.
Sequencing pretty much every small RNA molecule they could find.
That's the idea. They wanted to see which signals popped up consistently.
So this started with a discovery cohort. How big was that?
Relatively small initially. 33 patients, all of white European ancestry. They had three groups. Type 2 diabetics with CKD.
T2DKD.
Right. Then type 2 diabetics with normal kidney function, T2DNRF. And non-diabetic controls, also with normal function, NDNRF.
And the diabetic CKD group, their kidney function was significantly lower.
Oh, yeah. Their average EGFR was around 30, much lower than the other groups.
Okay, so they sequenced the plasma RNAs. What did they find?
Well, after all that sequencing and analysis, like hierarchical clustering, it boiled down to just three mirrors that were significantly different between the groups.
Only three? Out of potentially hundreds?
Only three stood out robustly. And the spotlight quickly fell on MIR-190A5P.
Why that one specifically?
Two key reasons. First, it showed a really substantial decrease in the T2DKD patients, a logfold change of -2.47, which is quite a big drop.
So less of it around when the kidneys were struggling.
Exactly. And second, crucially, it was reliably detected in all the samples they tested. It wasn't some fleeting signal. It was consistently there, just at lower levels in the CKD group. It was the clearest, most consistent signal.
Okay, interesting discovery. But 33 patients isn't huge. What next?
Validation. Absolutely critical. They moved to a much larger independent group of patients, the sensor study cohort.
How many people in that one?
298 CKD patients. And importantly, this cohort had diverse underlying causes for their kidney disease, not just diabetes.
So checking if the finding holds true beyond just diabetic kidney disease, that boosts the relevance, right?
Massively. And for this validation, they used a different technique, RT-qPCR. It's more targeted, more easily translated to a potential clinical test eventually.
Makes sense. Did they do anything else? Functional studies?
They did. They looked at human kidney biopsy tissue to see if the levels in the blood correlated with levels actually in the kidney tissue.
Ground truthing the signal's origin.
Precisely. And they also used mouse models. Specifically, a common kidney injury model called ischemia reperfusion injury, or UIRI.
To see if they could actually do something with this MIR.
Exactly. They tested whether giving the mice a synthetic version, a mimic, of MIR-190A5P could potentially act as a treatment, maybe protect the kidney from injury. #TagTag5. Key findings. Okay, so when you pull together all the data from the discovery cohort, the big validation cohort, the tissue analysis, the animal models, a really consistent story emerges about MIR-190A5P.
All right, let's dig into that story. What did the validation show? Did the lower levels hold up?
They did. In that larger sensor cohort, lower circulating MIR-190A5P levels correlated, albeit modestly, but significantly, with lower EGFR. So less MIR, generally poorer kidney function.
Okay, a correlation. Yeah. But you mentioned prediction earlier. Did it predict future problems?
Ah, this is where it's really interesting. Yes. They followed these sensor patients over time, a median follow-up of nearly 4 years.
Yeah.
And they found that patients who started with low serum MIR-190A5P levels specifically, levels below the median for the group, had a significantly increased risk of their CKD getting worse over those 4 years.
So low levels today meant a higher chance of progression tomorrow.
That's the key prognostic finding. What's really crucial here...
Oh, I guess it was independent of the usual suspects.
You got it. This predictive power held up even after they accounted for age, starting EGFR, and importantly, ACR, the protein leakage marker. It was providing new information, unique predictive value.
Wow. Okay, but I remember reading that there was a specific group where this was most powerful. Something about protein levels.
Yes, absolutely critical point. This independent predictive power, this added value, was really only significant in the patients who had low to moderate albuminuria.
So ACR below 300 millimuromol. Why only them?
It points to the specific niche for this biomarker. Think about it. If a patient is already spilling tons of protein, their ACR is sky high. Well, their glomerular disease, the filter damage, is already very advanced. That high ACR is already a very strong predictor of a bad outcome.
So the MIR signal gets drowned out, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Or becomes less relevant when the filter damage is that severe?
Exactly. But for that large group of patients where the ACR is normal or only slightly elevated, the ones where we struggle to predict risk currently, that's where MIR-190A5P shines.
It flags the hidden risk in the group that ACR misses. The ones whose kidney engine, the tubules, might be failing silently.
Precisely. It fills that critical diagnostic gap we talked about earlier.
Okay, so it helps predict risk in this difficult group. How much better did it actually make the prediction models? Was it a noticeable improvement?
It was statistically significant, which is the key thing in research. They looked at the standard clinical risk prediction model using age, EGFR, and ACR.
Oh.
Then they added MIR-190A5P to that model. And the C statistic, which is a measure of how well the model distinguishes between people who will progress versus those who won't.
Where 1.0 is perfect and 0.5 is just random chance, like flipping a coin.
Right. The C statistic improved from 0.719 without the MIR to 0.719 to 0.738.
Okay, 0.719 to 0.738. Doesn't sound like a giant leap numerically.
In risk prediction modeling, improving the C statistic by nearly 0.02 or 2 percentage points based on adding a single biomarker is actually considered quite meaningful. And importantly, the improvement was statistically significant with a p-value of 0.014.
So it adds real, measurable confidence in identifying those rapid progressors, especially in the low ACR group.
That's the punchline. It improves our ability to see the future for those patients.
And what about the source? Did they confirm it comes from the kidneys, specifically those tubular cells?
They did. Remember the biopsy tissue analysis?
Yeah.
They found that the MIR-190A5P levels circulating in the blood correlated significantly with the expression levels of the same MIR within the kidney tissue samples.
Okay, wrong link.
And even more telling, within the kidney tissue itself, higher MIR-190A5P expression correlated positively with EGFR better function and with markers of healthy tubular cell mass.
So more MIR meant more healthy engine cells.
Exactly. And conversely, it was negatively correlated with histological fibrosis, the scarring in the kidney.
Less MIR, more scarring.
Precisely. It all points very strongly to this MIR being produced by and reflecting the health of those crucial proximal tubular cells. It's a direct marker of a healthy kidney engine. #6, discussion and implications.
Okay, let's pull this together. What does it all mean? We've basically found this molecule, MIR-190A5P.
Made by healthy kidney tubule cells.
Right, and its levels drop in the blood when that kidney engine's in trouble. And critically, low levels help predict bad outcomes, especially in those patients. Our standard protein test, ACR, might miss.
That sums it up nicely. So implication one is clearly the potential diagnostic, or rather prognostic value.
Predicting the future.
Yeah. This MIR isn't trying to replace ACR. It complements it. Its real strength is in risk stratifying that challenging group of patients with low or no proteinuria.
The ones currently flying under the radar.
Potentially, yes. Identifying them earlier could mean interventions that preserve kidney function for years longer. That's a huge potential benefit.
Okay, that's the what. What about the why? Any mechanistic insights? Why is losing this MIR linked to progression?
That's implication two. The research suggests that MIR-190A5P normally acts like a brake on certain damaging processes in those tubular cells.
A protective role.
Seems like it. When levels drop, maybe due to injury or stress, that brake is released. And this might allow certain profibrotic genes, genes that promote scarring, to get switched on inappropriately.
Did they identify any specific culprits that get unleashed?
They pointed a strong finger at one molecule in particular, ADM.
ADM10. What's that?
It's a type of enzyme called a shedase. It's known to be involved in kidney injury pathways and driving fibrosis, that harmful scarring process.
So the theory is healthy cells make plenty of miR-190A5P, which keeps ADE10 in check.
Mm-hmm.
But when the miR levels fall,
ADM10 activity goes up, contributing to damage and scarring. And crucially, remember the mimic experiments.
In the cells and the mice, yeah.
When they artificially boosted miR-190A5P levels using the mimic, they saw a profound reduction in ADM10 expression.
Ah, so the mimic put the brakes back on ADM10.
It strongly suggests that's a key part of how miR-190A5P is protective, silencing that damaging signal.
Which leads beautifully into the third implication.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this could be a therapy.
That's implication three. Therapeutic promise. It's early days, based on animal models, but it's exciting.
What happened when they gave the mimic to the mice with kidney injury?
The protective effect was pretty clear. They saw significantly lower levels of known tubular injury markers, like KIM-1, that's half-CRR1 in mice.
Less chemical evidence of cell stress.
Right. And physically, they saw much less collagen deposition in the kidneys of the treated mice.
Less scarring.
Exactly. Less fibrosis. So it strongly suggests that finding ways to preserve or maybe even restore miR-190A5P levels in injured kidneys could be a future therapeutic strategy.
Aiming to maintain the health of those vital tubular cells, slow down the engine failure.
That's the hope.
Okay, but we need to be balanced. Every study has limitations. What were the main challenges or caveats the researchers themselves pointed out?
Good point. First, as we touched on earlier, quantification is still tricky. This miR circulates at pretty low levels.
Hard to measure reliably.
It can be. In fact, it was sometimes undetectable in patients with very advanced CKD, the ones with the lowest eGFR. So we'll need more sensitive, maybe standardized clinical grade assays before this could become a routine blood test.
Makes sense. What else?
The predictive power vanishing in patients with heavy proteinuria, the high ACR group.
Right, we discussed that. It defines its niche.
Exactly. It tells us this marker is specifically for assessing risk related to tubular health, primarily when major glomerular damage isn't already the dominant factor. And finally, the link to ADM10.
It's suggestive, but not definitive proof.
It's a strong correlation, and the mimic data supports it, but they acknowledge more work is needed. Like, ideally, you'd want to see if the protective effect of the miR mimic is lost in mice that are genetically engineered to lack ADM10.
In a knockout mouse experiment, to prove it's the direct target.
Precisely. That would really nail down the mechanism. ####7 take-home message. So if we boil it all down, what's the central insight? I'd say it's that this circulating microRNA, miR-190A5P, seems to be predominantly coming from healthy kidney proximal tubule cells.
Making it a non-invasive indicator, a kind of liquid biopsy, for the health and maybe even the quantity of those crucial tubular cells.
Exactly. It reflects the health of the kidney's engine.
And critically, low levels are bad news. They independently predict CKD progression, especially in that really important group of patients with low protein leakage. The ones where current markers often fall short.
Helping clinicians spot that hidden risk.
Well, on the flip side, the animal studies showing that restoring the miR can actually mitigate injury and fibrosis. Well, that offers a glimmer of therapeutic hope for the future.
A potential path forward.
It really makes you wonder, doesn't it? What does this mean for the future of CKD screening and monitoring? Are we going to need a shift?
A shift from just measuring what the kidney filters out, like with eGFR and ACR?
Towards also measuring the health of the cells, actually doing the fundamental work inside the kidney, like these tubular biomarkers,
yeah.
To get the full picture.
It certainly seems like getting that complete picture filter and engine health might be crucial for truly understanding and managing CKD effectively in the future. Makes you think. ###8, closing section and call to action.
This deep dive was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our deep dive description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.